Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to WRCT 88.3 Pittsburgh FM, Carnegie Mellon. It's 11:06 p.m., and this is the radio show Loveline, where every week we bring you fascinating and creative elements about sexuality from around the globe. Tonight is one of my personal favorite topics. I've been a fan of science fiction and fantasy for ages, and always thought there was something missing due to the kind of restrictive so-called family-oriented broadcast standards in this country. I've always felt that fantasy and science fiction hasn't gone far enough, hasn't really touched the deeper, more sexual sides of my favorite characters. And tonight we're going to address that deficiency by talking with one of the internet's most famous creative fan fiction. What she does is she creates a kind of fiction called slash fiction, and what it does is it fills this gap and it discusses the more sexual lives of your favorite characters and mine. Before we get into that, I'm going to introduce everyone in the studio with me. I'm DJ slash fiction 5000, and with me in the room are
Judd,
Pablo,
Laura,
and sitting next to me is someone who's yet to decide what his name is. We'll call him Kosh for now.
Yes.
And
Sheridan.
Kosh and Sheridan. Indeed. Well, welcome all of you. Laura is indeed our special guest for tonight, and I want to just open up the phones right away. If you're out there on the web or listening to us over the radio, and you have questions about this, please don't hesitate to contact us at 412-621-WRCT. If you're on campus, that's just 8-WRCT. That's 5 fewer digits. So, Laura, tell me about slash fiction. What is it?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that Kosh and Sheridan here are eminently slashable. Slash fiction is a genre of fan fiction that creates or expands upon homosexual relationships between the characters. So specifically, it originated with the genre of Kirk and Spock. So boffing each other.
Correct me if I'm wrong. In the original series, Kirk and Spock had no overt sexual relationship. Is that right?
No overt sexual relationship. Correct.
Interesting. And so slash fiction is particularly homosexual fiction relating to these characters?
Yes. People do write heterosexual fiction relating to these characters, but that is not classified as slash.
Oh, okay. So how did this start, this genre of fiction?
People started writing Star Trek fan fiction while the series was still alive, and there came to be a genre called hurt comfort.
Ooh,
which
that
is,
sounds appealing.
Someone gets hurt, and someone else comforts them. And what happened was that somebody took the next logical step in that, and that the comfort became a sexual sort of comfort.
Wow. I mean, that's just like my life, except for the comfort part. Right. So your personal involvement, what brought you to start writing fiction like this?
That's a very interesting question. The first piece of Star Trek fan fiction that I wrote was heterosexual, PG-13, family-oriented. But it didn't touch the nerve that I wanted fan fiction to touch. And I started reading some of the erotica once I came of age, and found that some of it was particularly beautiful and that it filled that void.
Once you came of
somehow.
Age? What age? You mean?
Really, I felt very uneasy reading it when I was, 16, 17, and then I got older and grew up.
So you had some sort of internal sexual awakening that also corresponded with your reaching out over the internet to your fictional character.
Yes, and also figuring out that I wasn't entirely straight helped with this a great deal.
Hmm.
It's much easier to accept homosexual relationships between characters when you're sitting there going, wow, that chick's pretty cute.
Wow. So I would like to just start, if you don't mind, because I'm having a hard time imagining imagining one of these stories. If you could read for us one of your short stories, one of your very short little vignettes, I would really it would help clarify. I mean, of course, you know, we all know the characters of Star Trek and so on, but.
Before you start, do you think this, the experience of space travel would also help you relate to the stories you write?
The experience of space travel. So, you know, if I were on Mir, I'd feel more comfortable doing this.
Right, just like being a little homosexual makes you feel.
Would find these, would identify with these stories more. Is that what you're?
Well, I don't know. They're not so much focused on interstellar travel, although someone did recently write a transporter sex story, in which I think Sulu and Uhura were having sex on a transporter.
Writing with the teledildonics. You mean
while they were in the beam?
Yeah.
State between.
Yes.
Between, like, in that momentary energy state, they were intertwined.
How much time do you have?
There was also one where Kirk and Spock got caught in the transporter as they were floating around, and they ended up on Admiral Nogura's desk.
That's a quickie, man. So they are not per se about space travel. That's very interesting. Why don't we hear it?
You want to hear this one?
I'd love it.
Okay. This is short. It's about 2 pages long. It's called A Pair of Aging Queens.
Aging Queens.
There was a review of one of the Star Trek movies, which contained the line, "McCoy and Spock fight for Kirk's attention like a pair of aging queens." And I found this entertaining. So, here we go. Leonard McCoy tapped his fingers irritably on the table in the officer's mess. Spock was playing chess with Jim again tonight. In the captain's quarters, apparently, since neither of them had shown up here. Len scowled ferociously and looked up as someone else entered the room. But it was only Uhura. She smiled at him and started to come over, but he deepened his scowl and turned away. He began scratching the table surface just for variety. After another half hour, he became conscious of the stares of the other officers and left, biting back the impulse to scream, "Can't a man be in a bad mood once in a while?" He went to his quarters, barely glancing at Kirk's along the way. Once home, he locked his door and opened his closet. There was a false wall installed in the back, and he slid it aside with an ease born of frequent practice. He took out his makeup kit and his favorite dress, a frilly blue affair that brought out the color of his eyes. Lovingly, he dressed himself, carefully pulling back his hair and skin with the stocking so that he could do his makeup. Nothing flamboyant, not today. Just hiding the flaws in his skin and bringing out his eyes. Ooh, so large, he thought, and such a lovely shade. He ducked back into the closet to find his wig, with its soft brown rag curls perfectly spiraled. There! It didn't matter that his real hair was graying, not when his wig covered it. It didn't matter that his skin was starting to sag when it still pulled back so nicely. He preened for a moment, then waved his hand at the mirror. "I now pronounce you Lynette." She fluttered her fingers at herself. "Why, I declare." Then she set her lips and set out to get her man. Lynette exited her quarters and brushed an errant strand of hair back from her face before setting off for Jim's quarters. Enough was enough. His door was locked. She pressed the buzzer with a carefully painted fingernail, a disdainful look on her face. "Who is it?" The captain sounded a little breathless. Well, she'd fix that. "McCoy," she said sweetly. "Come in." Lynette swept into the room. Jim was sitting at his desk, shirtless. The chess pieces were scattered on the floor, and Spock was nowhere to be seen. Kirk shot out of his seat. "Bones?" "Sometimes, but you can call me Linny." "Linny." Something in the captain's tone said that he didn't quite believe his eyes. Lynette moved closer until she was close enough to touch him. "Yes, Jim." She started stroking his shoulders, pressing downward gently until he dropped back into his seat. "I've been hoping you would come see me, but you're always so busy with him." She bent towards him and licked her lips. "But he isn't here." Linny, he... She kissed him. After a second, his lips parted beneath hers. With one hand, she raised her skirts and slid one knee between his thighs, pressing her breasts against his neck. He raised his hands as if to push her away, but somehow they became tangled in the frilly fabric, and then Spock was on them. He was wet, having just come from the shower. He was cat-like, fast and strong. He was long and lean and naked, and he was angry. Lynette managed to cushion her head when he threw her against the wall. "You think you can have him all to yourself?" she screamed. "Who do you think you are? I've known him longer." Spock was very still for an instant, then he slapped her across the face. "Bitch!" He placed his hands on his hips, as if challenging her to strike back. Lynette lunged forward and raked her nails over his face. Faint green streaks appeared and began to leak blood over him. Spock tossed his head. "He's always been mine, Eleni. For years and years, I kiss him, I sleep with him, and lots of times I let him do things to me. Things he's never wanted to do to you." "You witch, Spock," Lynette sneered. Spock raised his hand again, and suddenly Kirk was in the way. "Ladies, please." They both stared at him, breathing hard. "I know both of you very well. Well enough to know two things. One, you want each other just as much as you want me. And two, there's enough of me to go around." He looked at them, wearing his best innocent face. Spock swallowed. Lynette licked her lips. Then she reached out with both hands, one to touch Kirk's stomach gently, and the other to trace the curve of Spock's hip. "A lady knows when to bow to superior wisdom," she said. "As does a Vulcan," he replied.
Wow, what can I say? That was fabulous.
There wasn't much sex in that one. But.
Yeah, but even so, I'm sporting a powerful erection at this point. That was wonderful. So, McCoy, just as I imagine him, or her, I guess. So you're at a wide variety of fiction, right? Some of it's sort of humorous, like that one, and some of it is actually more erotic and more explicit. Of course, we can't
read the explicit
ones.
Stuff.
Those are available on the Lovelang DVD-ROM, which you can get off our website. I'm curious about where these. Kind of homosexual, the idea that these characters might be homosexual comes from. I mean, you know, on the original Star Trek series, I know that I certainly had my own fantasies about the various interactions of the characters, but there was never anything explicitly said, or was there?
Well, I think that there's certainly a homoerotic subtext to a lot of Star Trek. I think it was there deliberately.
So
I think Roddenberry had something to do with it, and I think the actors were putting it in.
So you think Roddenberry himself actually had some kind of...
Roddenberry was... I think he was feeding into this like crazy.
Really?
He wrote the novelization for the Star Trek, the motion picture. Most people are of the opinion that Alan Dean Foster actually wrote it. But and there's a footnote on a page where Spock calls Kirk... a Vulcan word, which is usually pronounced Tyla, which can mean either friend, brother, or lover. And there's this whole long footnote about whether Spock meant lover or not. And it's very ambiguous, and you don't end out figuring out what he meant. It's pretty interesting.
So this is in the novel or in the sort of annotated...
This is in the novelization of the movie, which was written by Gene Roddenberry.
That didn't appear in the movie? I seem to remember a brother thing in the movie, but it's been a while since I've seen it.
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Spock looks up at Kirk, smiles, clasps his hand, and says, "This simple feeling is beyond V'ger's comprehension." But there are a couple other scenes from the original series. One is in Amok Time. The City on the Edge of Forever. And Spock's been constructing this big thing to work
in their cramped little apartment,
which only has two beds.
Just to remind our non-Star Trek listeners, this is the famous, very famous episode with Joan Collins, am I correct?
Yes, this is the episode with Joan Collins.
Widely believed to be the best Star Trek episode ever.
It was written by Harlan Ellison. They go back in time. Joan Collins is a social worker. And Kirk and Spock are sharing this tiny little apartment, which is basically two beds and a table. And so Spock constructs this whole huge array over one of the beds and leaves it there for about a week. And I'm sort of wondering where he and Kirk were sleeping.
I think we found the only member of the...
Tyla, friend, lover, brother. Just yeah, go with that. So that...
I think we found the only member of the...
I know Roddenberry is circling the Earth as we speak.
Yes, Roddenberry is circling the Earth.
I don't know about the others. Who's Joan Collins and who is...
She's an actress. She's very stupid.
Oh, I see. So you're talking a particular Star Trek episode from the 60s.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt.
You know, generally regarded as one of the better one, so it should be. If you should know any Star Trek episodes, you should know this one. We'll have to correct this deficiency in your education.
But when we get a chance. You know, since before you're hot.
You should know that one, and you should know the two by Ted the Fish, and that's about it.
Ted the Fish?
Theodore Sturgeon.
Does that mean something?
Oh.
He wrote Amok Time, the one where Spock goes into Pon Farr, you know, and has to mate, or else he'll explode.
What's Pon Farr?
Spock has to mate or else he'll explode. Let's pursue that. Okay. Because I feel that way myself sometimes.
This is basic. We're going to get off. I don't know if we want to spend time.
Okay, we'll probably pump for later or whatever the name is.
I can lend you the episode if you want.
Does touch
that happens in my planet, you know.
This does touch on the first question I had when I was hearing your beautiful rendition. Which is, well, I don't know if people who enjoy Star Trek / fiction are as nitpicky as people who comment on Star Trek in general, but there's the obvious question, how do you resolve your hypothesis with the whole Pon Farr mythology?
Well, there's nothing that says that Vulcans only have sex when they go into Pon Farr. In fact, it's rather established that they can have sex outside of Pon Farr in the episode The Cloud Minders, when someone asks Spock if anything can upset the cycle of Pon Farr.
Point of clarification. Pon Farr is a state or a planet?
It's a state.
It's an every 7 years.
A state
year.
Of mind. A physiological state.
Every 7 years, there's this huge biochemical thing that goes on with Vulcans.
It's like the salmon.
Yeah, it's like the salmon. They have to go mate or they die.
For me, it happens with El Nino.
So it's every 3 years then with you.
Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
So, Spock indicates that Pon Farr is not the only time that Vulcans can mate, but every 7 years they have to.
Interesting.
Related question. In your story, Spock was angry, even by the narration. Is it common to, I mean, because in Star Trek, of course, he is supposed to be emotionless as...
Well, he's not emotionless. He just does this whole logical thing, and it's a complete sham.
Right. So my question isn't whether he's angry or whether that's consistent. It's whether his angriness is part of the sort of hidden side of it, because he never shows angriness on purpose.
I think it is part of the hidden thing and something that people would like to see brought out in certain contexts. It's certainly the anger and the emotional side of Spock certainly has been brought out a good deal in the standard Star Trek canon. You know, there's that scene in Star Trek VI where he mind rapes that girl and, you know.
Well, there's the Pon Farr episode. It's the end of
the Pon Farr episode itself.
So, outside of the Pon Farr episode, in the original Star Trek, it was not played up very much. It really only became an issue after he was resurrected in Star Trek III. Or am I just not really
I don't think so. I think there was enough of it towards the end of Star Trek the Motion Picture that a case can be made for it.
Okay, the moderator is going to quash this particular tangent. And move on, if you don't mind. I'd actually like to go back to other... Oh, by the way, to our listeners, I would just like to say, as a hip Star Trek reference, since before your sun burned hot in space, we have awaited a phone call to the studio, 621-WRCT, or 268-WRCT. Please call in with your Star Trek questions. I wanted to ask you...
Annual sexy questions.
I mean, I'm fascinated by this whole subtext idea. I mean, you mentioned City on the Edge of Forever. We've been fighting about whether Spock ever showed emotion, and I agree, it's sort of iffy, like when he killed, you know, Spock killed Kirk during the Pon Farr thing, and then he was happy when he was not dead and so on. Hope I'm not spoiling the episode for anyone.
Well, you are probably for Pablo, because that was going to be the second episode that I'd make him see after City on the Edge of Forever would be the Pon Farr episode.
Now, I remember when I was watching the episode called Shore Leave, there was something intriguing about that.
That was Ted Sturgeon's other episode, aside from Amok Time.
Oh, really?
And what happened there is Kirk's sitting in the command chair, and he gets a crick in his back, and he's going, oh, my back has a cramp. And so the yeoman standing behind him starts giving him a back rub, and he assumes it's Spock. He's like, oh, yes, Spock, that feels so good.
He
assumes it's Spock.
Wow.
So which episode? I'm sorry, I don't have context.
That was in Shore Leaf, with the big white rabbit.
Thank you. That's what I thought it was.
And let me play devil's advocate for a second. Probably because of Spock's intricate knowledge of the nervous system.
Oh, come on.
Wow, like, seriously, can you see Spock just randomly giving Kirk a back rub unless there was something going on there?
That's strength and stamina, though.
In a medical way, he has an excellent point. Spock is probably the perfect sexual partner. He knows your nervous system completely, right?
Not to mention that he can get completely inside your head.
He's very precise.
He
can get totally inside your head, right? He can give you an orgasm at a distance.
A lot of my stories play up on that very fact that Spock is, you know, building this whole clique of people who love to have sex with him because, you know, he just reaches in and gets their nerves and they have incredible orgasms, you know. It's like the whole theory of a lot of my slash fiction.
So are there any X-rated versions of Star Trek episodes that you know of? Like in film or video?
There are a couple that people have created. There's one whose name I unfortunately cannot say due to FCC regulations on the air, but it can be found on the CMU network.
Well, I've never been spoofed porn movies based on Star Trek episodes, but...
Yeah.
Really?
There have been a number.
Hmm. Can you give us the name with blanks? Like say
F for... blank 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 Q.
Okay.
Q being the character Q, the omnipotent creature.
Yeah, but unfortunately he doesn't show up in the episode. I was hoping it was going to be a Picard Q slash because that's one of my favorite genres. But
so you're a reasonably famous writer. I'm sure you have been approached to writing some scripts for such episodes.
No.
Do you think that would be the base in your art, or would you be willing to write one?
Would I be willing to write scripts for such things?
Specifically X-rated Star Trek episodes. That seems to be
I'll write anything X-rated Star Trek you ask for.
I really doubt that Paramount would go along. And
Paramount would not be happy, but, you know.
That's actually a question I was going to ask also. Has Paramount noticed this whole genre of work?
Paramount really doesn't crack down on this, I think, because people put disclaimers in all their work. People really are very careful about making sure that they say at the beginning of everything they write, the Star Trek universe belongs to Paramount. These characters belong to Paramount. I'm just taking them out of the toy box and playing with them for a little while, and I'll put them back when I'm done. I swear I won't break them.
Yeah, for as long as they don't make any money, that would work.
Yeah.
I should say our producer is just beamed in from Talos 7 and appears to have some kind of comment. Welcome, Kate.
Hello. You once again had a shy caller call in and ask about Bones McCoy, I believe it was.
Oh.
And whether or not you could delve into the that nickname.
Lynette Linney. Oh, Bones McCoy.
I believe that's what
Bones McCoy.
He's the most human of the characters. He would be...
And that name, Bones.
Is that the nickname of one of the characters or something?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the doctor, I think.
Sorry, I'm not...
Dr. McCoy.
How did he get the name Bones?
Well, there are a number of theories. Some claim that it is a sexual nickname. Others claim that it's an abbreviation of Sawbones, the old slang term for doctor. And others claim it's because he's skinny. I think we'd really have to beam him into the studio and ask him, but that could be difficult because I hear he's, you know, on the other side of the galaxy.
We're having transporter problems now, too, so... Wow, so, the old kind of Star Trek original series is not really the only source of my sexual fantasies, though. I've had fantasies about Next Generation characters and Deep Space Nine and, of course, Voyager characters.
Is there anybody on TV you haven't had fantasies about?
How about the Party of Five characters? Oh, no, they definitely quash all of my sexual feelings.
Just wanted to establish that.
So that actually brings up a good question. Is there slash that isn't Star Trek? You know, say, X-Files slash or even non-science fiction slash?
Yeah, Mulder Skinner is pretty popular, and Starsky Hutch.
Ooh.
Please tell me you're kidding about Starsky Hutch.
Oh, I'm not kidding about Starsky Hutch. There's also Miami Vice slash.
How about Cagney and Lacey?
Oh, you know what? I actually don't know. I've never found any Cagney and Lacey slash, but I suspect
of course,
it exists.
Lacey's married. I mean, that brings
up
the whole...
Which opens...
Well, you know.
How about Some Like It Hot? Oh, wait, no. I guess that would be too easy.
Well, Starsky Hutch. Is there like a Starsky Boss Hog kind of thing?
Starsky Boss Hog?
What are you...
Wasn't
Boss Hog...
No, that was Dukes of Hazzard.
Bo and Luke. Very good.
Let's not think about Bo and Luke. That's just wrong.
There you go. We'll edit that out of the tape before it transmits.
Boss Hogg, what am I thinking?
But, Boss Hogg and the General Lee, I think, are about in the right weight class for an equitable relationship there.
No, okay. Well, I mean, but really, the only good science fiction on television right now is, of course, 005. And so...
I wouldn't call it good science fiction.
Really?
Really.
Why not?
Well, I mean, it's not that I don't like the show. I do like the show. But one of the most important things about science fiction is that it deals with the human experience and humanity and the way humanity copes. And Babylon 5, I think, is so focused on politics and technology that they forget there are human beings involved, and it makes it very difficult to deal with.
I'm getting a transmission from the somebody. How about, okay, Dukes of Hazzard? How about Cooter, they say?
Cooter
in the Dukes of Hazzard, right?
Cooter was the mechanic. Cooter and who?
I don't know. The transmission is unreliable.
Cooter and Enos.
Yeah, well, that's too easy.
Who's Enos?
Enos was the deputy. Oh. Enos had a thing for Daisy. I don't know.
Oh, poor Daisy.
I don't know who these people are. So, we talk about sex, but we start talking about 70s TV shows, and we get one call after the other.
if our callers,
I think we should change the topic of the show.
If our callers do have a sexual fantasy they'd like us to elucidate on the air about their favorite 70s characters, maybe Flo and Alice, for example.
But you have to say it in a low voice and make us a little aroused, because right now I'm not.
Exactly. Well, so, I mean, is the reason why this works is because, especially, I can imagine with Star Trek, because people have watched them over and over again, and they're always looking for something new in every word and every raised eyebrow, and that's why this becomes such an attractive proposition. Well, and in fact, you were giving me some examples of those nuances earlier. The idea that Kirk and Spock have this kind of familiarity about their quarters or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, they walk into each other's quarters when they're engaged in personal activities. You know, that they don't knock, they don't care, they just waltz right in
well,
and out.
The door's open automatically. How can they knock? There's no time.
Well, they can lock. I mean, they've got to have locks on their quarter doors in some way.
I suppose.
They have to say shh before the door's open.
No, I mean, it's been established in canon that, for the most part, people ring a doorbell before coming into somebody's quarters, and Kirk and Spock at some point just stop doing that. They just waltz in and out of each other's places. It's a very familiar feel.
So what's Gene Roddenberry?
Roddenberry
or whatever.
Rod.
What's Rod? Was Rod gay?
No. No, he was not.
Maybe
yeah, he was married. He was married to.
You can be married and be gay or.
And he had an affair with Uhura, according to my sources.
I'd never heard.
That was apparently before he married Majel Barrett, though. Majel Barrett. I don't know how you pronounce her name.
I think it's a J.
I've heard Majel.
I've heard Majel. Yeah.
Who's now producing the brilliant Earth Final Conflict.
Nearly the brilliant 2 producer. In the morning Earth Final Conflict.
Uh-huh. Well, it depends what you have.
So is there Earth the Final Conflict slash?
It's a little early.
I don't know.
Are there any other shows really cool in which people suspect, like you're suspecting, that there is a...
Well, there's obviously Xena.
Well, yes,
Xena's the most obvious one.
Xena's now playing with that in the show. It's clear that in the show they're playing to that whole
No, but I'm thinking about years ago when it was much more risque to do something like this.
Well, actually, I forget the actor's name. Michael somebody, the guy who played Hutch in Starsky and Hutch, actually said at one point that his take on it was that they were two guys in love who happened to be cops who worked together.
And Mr. Freud is coming into my head right now. Oh, he just flipped on a banana. My goodness. That's interesting.
I don't know if he was I can't remember his name now, if he was a method actor or not. That was part of his story. He decided that was part of the character story.
He decided that was part of the character story.
Michael Glazer, hello, that's one of them.
Yeah, that's it. That's probably who you mean.
And the other one is... the other one didn't have Michael in his name.
Welcome to Entertainment Tonight. The phone numbers are 268-9728 and 621-9728, country code 1, area code 412.
So have you only written Star Trek various series slash, or have you tried other universes?
I've written other erotica. I haven't written other slash. I started writing erotica when I was about 12.
Really? Did you understand what erotica was?
Oh, yeah. You know. I mean, people make this big deal about the internet making it easier for kids to get porn. I've always found it easier to get it off the street, you know.
Yeah, but could you feel it enough to generate some of your own?
Off the street?
My neighborhood, they swept the streets every morning. I never saw any porn.
I was told, I didn't even...
Well, you were completely... Actually, my father had this, like, enormous collection.
And he let you access it?
No,
he
didn't
let
me.
In the street, obviously.
He didn't let me access it, but, you know, if you looked in his room, you could find it. It was very easy to find.
So at 12, you
had to go deep in the closet.
My childhood was totally repressed also.
Oh, so, yeah, you were saying before that there was a lot of hurt, but no comfort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you need a hug?
Perpetually.
What I want is a hug from Wesley Crusher. That's my fantasy.
Crush me. So, right, so at 12, do you have a sexual instinct already, or are you just trying to be a grown-up?
I think that everybody has a sexual instinct from, like, the moment they're born. I mean, you know, little kids, when they're 5 and 6, are playing doctor. I know people who lost their virginity at 9 or 10 because they were fooling around with somebody. You know, and they got sexual pleasure out of it, and they, in some cases, continued to have sexual relationships with these people for a long period of time.
Well, and there's that recent news story about the boy in England who's a father now at 11.
Yeah.
No, I don't doubt that it's possible, but that they would actually seek it. I mean, to write erotica, you have to have a great force that drives you towards it.
I was talking.
I'm sorry, please. I'm talking a lot.
Well, I think, I mean, especially a 12-year-old, you're talking about somebody who's just hit puberty, and so they've got these massive quantities of hormones being pumped into their bodies, just like Ponfar, right? Only they're not legally allowed to get laid.
All the time. Oh, I remember now, 12. Oh, yeah.
And so you find some sort of outlet for that, and that's why I started writing erotica then. But I started writing slash only recently. And I specifically write Star Trek original series slash mainly Kirk Spock stuff.
Have you ever done or is it popular to do female homosexual slash?
It's not nearly as popular as male slash. I think in a lot of cases the relationships between females on television shows are not as well developed as their relationships with males or with the relationships between males. Obviously, there's a good deal of Xena Gabrielle slash, what else is becoming popular? B'Elanna Torres and Catherine Janeway from Star Trek Voyager is becoming popular. Janeway 7 also shows up a bit.
Yeah, I guess it's, for some reason, it's less surprising with women, like Thelma and Louise. Well, yeah, sure, of course. You know, it's not as shocking as with Spock.
Oh, I think part of it also is that a lot of slash fiction is written by women. And so it's sort of that whole thing about how straight guys like to watch lesbians, you know, or like to watch two women together. It might be the same sort of thing, you know. Women like to watch guys, or maybe they're uncomfortable with the male-female dynamic in some way.
About some perception of a power imbalance or something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any theories on why slash fiction is most often written by women?
Well, can you honestly see, like, a straight man rating Kirk and Spock boffing each other?
Sure. what stereotype is this of straight man you have?
I'll tell you. The people I know who've written male slash fiction have either been women, some of them have been lesbians, some of them have been bi, some of them have been straight, or gay men.
Okay.
And, well, there's actually one whose sexual preference I'm not too terribly sure of. Since he's never explicitly stated. So he might be straight. Raku, if you're straight, I'm sorry.
His name is Raghu?
Raku.
He must be Italian.
Raghu?
It's his screen name.
Oh, I see. Raghu,
I don't know his actual name.
In the Love Line Laboratories, and we'll determine his sexual orientation.
So does a breadstick stand up when you stick it in Raghu?
Come to the wreck, Raghu.
Interesting. Interesting analogy. Doing a little...
Just remembering that wonderful spaghetti sauce commercial.
So I think a straight man can talk about two men buffing each other as well as
only if
a virgin can talk
it.
About...
Well, I mean, it's technically possible, but if you've ever, you know, read a college B-board, these straight men are terribly homophobic.
And gay men are terribly colorful and flaky. What is this stereotype?
No, but gay men, having faced a lifetime of oppression, are very open-minded to all kinds of alternative lifestyles, whereas straight men, being the oppressive
I understand there's a pretty hard edge gay movement too, right? Anyway, I don't want to get into this, but right. Hey, man, so lay off the straight man, because
back off, or I'll write some fiction where you get sucked into a warp vortex and sent to the Delta Quadrant.
So can I just throw this out? Maybe just straight men don't write it because they're more interested in writing male female.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not as bothered.
But that's not Flash.
Why is there this distinction between straight and gay erotica for that? I don't see what the...
Well, because there are people who have serious moral or philosophical or otherwise objections to homosexual erotica that they don't have straight erotica. And so you want to give them some sort of flashing neon light that says, hello, if you're homophobic, don't read this.
It's true. You were showing me this lengthy diatribe from some internet person who wrote this lengthy document about how she must not read homosexual slash fiction and how other people must not be exposed to it. Isn't that right?
It wasn't that how other people must not be exposed to it. It's how people must not be exposed to it by accident, how it must be properly labeled and, you know, always make it explicitly clear that it's slash and include a definition of what slash is, so that people aren't, you know, so that people don't run into it their first time out and get frightened or whatever. I mean, I thought in a lot of ways it was an interesting argument, but I disagree. I think everybody should be exposed to slash.
There isn't a specific slash news group. I mean, I don't understand how people can fall into a forum and not know what they're getting into. The slash character is not a legal Usenet name, if I'm not mistaken. Is it?
Well, they can... What? No, but you can spell out slash.
Yeah. There is, for example, for Star Trek, there's alt Star Trek creative erotica moderated.
Oh, is that where this stuff lives?
Yes, that's okay. Where this stuff lives.
Okay, because I didn't Star Trek, we should say this again for our listeners. Alt.StarTrek.
Alt.StarTrek.creative.erotica.moderated. There's also a mailing list which mirrors the news group.
Mailing, I get it.
If you want to join the mailing list, you have to send email to ASCEML@AOL.com and include a statement of age and the fact that if you get sent slash, you won't be upset and that sort of stuff.
Maybe some hyperlinks can be provided off the Loveline website. We should mention our website. We are at, and I always get this wrong, http://loveline.wrct.com.
.com?
Yeah, we're on .com now, baby. Or we go both ways. We're not...
.com, not C-U-M.
Exactly.
So how much of the allure do people write slash about characters that are known to be gay or bi? Or is part of it that people are trying to explore the subtext that the writers never, you know, characters that were in the closet, as it were?
Well, I mean, there really aren't that many characters that are gay or bi.
Right. Well, there are a few now.
There are a few now. There's Ellen. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you really see Ellen Button?
There was Ivanova, and
there's Ivanova, but she's gone.
I've seen people generate, by the way, incredibly complex rationalizations about how Ivanova wasn't a lesbian; that she and Talia were just friends.
Who is this?
These are two Babylon 5 characters.
Oh, okay. Well,
didn't they on the show?
Yes, they were in bed together in the show, and so they're people who...
You know, Picard and Q were in bed together in the show.
These people are in complete denial.
But, you know, women have little sleepovers all the time. Anyway, I think it's pathetic.
What's this generalization about women that I hear?
Well, it's based on observation.
Okay, maybe not.
I can tell you the real reason that women go to the bathroom in groups. We're all secretly lesbians. Each and every one of us.
And you have to go...
Some of us just sleep with men, you know, because we like the look on their faces.
Is this why the lines for the bathroom are so long?
Interesting.
I'm not going to answer that question.
It's what the couch is for.
Hi.
Well, and that shelf by the mirror. People think it's to put, like, your handbags on, but no. It's just wide enough to put a person.
We have to keep thinking about gender all the time. And sexual orientations. Why can't we all be one happy pool of people enjoying each other?
Well,
then we wouldn't have any good jokes to make on the show.
Someone like you, Pablo, who transcends notions of gender and sexuality, freely crossing
and
back and forth between both worlds.
you know, I can understand that, but there are people who haven't achieved your level of...
Well, I haven't gotten quite there yet.
Interesting.
That's why my question, my wonderment, has more strength.
So have you ever met up at little conventions with your slash buddies?
I haven't,
and
no.
Lived out your fantasies?
I have this problem in that I'm a student and have no money and therefore cannot afford to travel. Hmm. There are people who have, and I envy them greatly, and I will join them as soon as I get a real job.
Are slash things subsets of other sci-fi conventions?
Yeah, so like a slash room in a convention?
Or are you spurned?
I don't think so specifically, no.
Are you spurned by the diehard Trekkers?
No. Well, you get flamed by them a lot. But a lot of us are diehard Trekkers.
I think you'd have to be to think of writing.
I mean, can you think of anybody who would write a Garrick Bashir slash fiction who wasn't a hardcore DS9 fan? It just doesn't work, you know.
Are you encrypting your conversation now?
No, they have lunch once a week. I don't remember what day of the week it is, but they have lunch at least once. The characters have a lunch, scheduled lunch date.
Garrick is a gay stereotype, and you know, Bashir's such a pretty boy.
He's a former spy who's now a tailor. Decoding it for Pablo and the two or three WRCT listeners who aren't familiar with the Star Trek universe.
John Le Carre is wondering if he was a tinker ever, but...
John Le Carre can go blow himself.
I mean, I just wish somebody, when they would write
spy
fiction about two characters who aren't annoying, like Wesley and Jake. That's a combination that hadn't occurred.
They aren't annoying?
Wesley
has evolved into another plane of existence. I really don't think he'd find Jake interesting.
Wesley and the Traveler, then?
Oh, that's getting a little too kinky, even for me.
Perverting my idea. Wesley and Jake, they're the same age. Well, they're from different centuries, probably.
Well, no, they're not the same age. Wesley's like 6 or 7 years older than Jake, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the older man.
But there was somebody who wrote a Wesley Crusher and Harry Kim on the premise that they'd been roommates at Starfleet Academy. So that was sort of interesting. But of course, you know, then you have the image of their, you know, beautiful angelic little boy faces intruding into everything, and it just makes the sex much less worthwhile.
Has anyone laced the don't ask, don't tell into the Naval Academy thing? You know, like being...
Well, theoretically, it's in the 23rd and 24th century, so they've sort of relaxed those strictures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, gays are allowed in the military now.
Oh, well
that's too bad, because that would explain why it's not so obvious in the series, you see.
There is that sort of homophobic scene with Dr. Crusher and the first...
Oh, yeah, when she was dating that male Trill, and the Trill got transferred into a female body.
Yeah, the one that looked like David Archenstiers in one of his incarnations.
Yeah,
that was so annoying.
That was kind of interesting.
What's the name of the big guy with ridges on his head?
Worf.
Worf.
Yeah.
Who do you mate Worf with?
He just got married.
What man?
Pablo, he just got married last
week.
Yeah,
Worf got married to Dax, which broke my heart, because you know, I have a major thing for Dax, and I just can't deal with him at all.
Yeah, but that's not Slash. Let's do the Slash version of the wedding.
Dax is a male, right?
Dax is whatever gender her host happens to be.
Yeah, Dax currently is female, and an absolute babe.
There was that Dax previous wife kiss, right?
That's right.
Sort of host setting.
Oh, so there was that lesbian kiss.
This is actually sort of relevant to discussion. The Trill are this symbiotic creature that live inside these host bodies, and the gender of the host can change over the lifetime of the symbiote. So there's an episode where Crusher gets into a relationship with this Trill, who then changes bodies into a female.
Wow.
And she rejects
him. What do you think about that?
I thought it was great until rejected him.
Never mind what happened to them. Imagine that happened to you.
Yeah, no, see, I thought that episode was a great opportunity for Star Trek to take a leap forward, and instead, in many ways, they took a step back. But they sort of redeemed themselves with the Dax kiss later on.
Yeah, I agree. In many ways, I interpreted that as a way of correcting the previous mistake with Crusher.
So Star Trek is not only a science fiction show, but it's also a source of ethics and enlightenment.
It always was. The first interracial kiss was on Star Trek.
Though it was under mind control.
Right. That's right. They didn't do it willingly.
And that's actually sort of disputed, too, because they didn't quite kiss on the air, if you study it frame by frame there.
There are two shots of that scene.
The standards for kisses in those series were different, though. You know,
people, you just had to get close.
You just had to, like, get your lips in the same general direction of the screen, you know, general area.
but there was interspecies sex going on Star Trek, and it seemed to me much more radical than an interracial kiss, but. What do I know? I grew up in the 80s.
Yeah, but they were white aliens in Kirk. So that was no one really perceived.
So do you have any more dirt? I'd love to hear some more.
What sort of dirt would you like?
What is the option?
I mean, are you saying read some more stories?
Yeah. Do you have some?
I have some.
Do you think that's okay?
I don't know how much of them are allowable in the air here.
Well, maybe the starting of it before they've before they've taken their clothes off or something.
And just put in little asterisks or something.
If you get to a word that's potentially very objectionable, if you use the scientific terminology rather than the street terminology, you should probably be okay. Am I not?
Well, yeah, since this is an educational show, that would be
proper.
Well,
I guess one question, I don't know how explicit you get, but I suppose you have to answer one of the questions, which is, how human is Spock?
Does Spock have a penis?
Physiologically, yeah.
He's half human.
I know he's half human, but he has Vulcan blood. He may not have human sexual.
His mother is human, so right, obviously so his father had.
No, not clear. At one point, I hypothesized that it was a test tube baby.
So, well, it would have had to be because there's genetic manipulation going on here.
And his Vulcan blood denser, does it engorge the member?
It's copper based. If you were listening carefully,
it's copper based. So
if you were listening carefully, that there was green blood mentioned in that story from before.
So that would be actually a handicap because the blood being more heavier, it can erase as quickly.
Right. See,
how many hearts do Vulcans have?
More slowly, then.
They only have one heart.
It's not always bad.
That's true.
Doctor Who is the one with two hearts. You're mixing your mythology.
No, I was just wondering. I actually couldn't remember one way or another.
All right. I've got a couple stories here that I could read. One of the things about Spock's anatomy as relates to humanity, there's a writer, she just changed her email address, kilasdra@aol.com.
Kilasdra.
Yes, has this theory that Spock has this double ringed penis. Apparently, although I've never been entirely clear on this, it's got two raised ridges around it.
Just sort of somewhere.
Not sure what they're for, but they're there for some reason.
Well, just like humans have one. What is it there for? Well, for pleasure.
Apparently, or his pleasure in the case of my pleasure, whatever his pleasure is, just
for clarification, is this some kind of like dog-like thing where they have a little raised area that actually traps the animal inside the partner's alien vagina?
Keep talking.
Or are these actually evolved for Vulcan pleasure?
Well, in one of the Star Trek novels that I read, the whole Ponfar thing was explained as for evolutionary reasons, that they had a very tough life and they just didn't have time for procreation on a regular basis. And
so it was sort of
there was some sort of drought water cycle that was 7 years or something in ancient Vulcan or something like that. I can't remember. It was in like Spock's world in one of those full life novels.
Can I jump back to the anatomical correctness question and ask, has there ever been any slash fiction about Data and somebody?
Yes, Data and Lore, actually. There's been some Data Picard. I don't know about Data Riker, but I suspect it exists.
Because it was, of course, established on the show that he was anatomical.
At least he said so.
Fully functional.
He had sex with Pasha.
Yes.
Off camera.
just off camera. It went off to the side. And
see, now, I've never been a big fan of Denise Crosby, so I'm kind of glad that we didn't have to see her naked
really?
On screen. Yeah.
But you could if you watch HBO regularly.
Janeway hookup would be pretty cool.
Tasha Janeway I could probably live with, yeah. So, DJ slash 5000, do you want me to read this paragraph that you've written fabulous by? Or should I leave that one out? That was kind of explicit.
As I was studying your fiction, I did find it pretty arousing. I actually think Pablo is more of an expert on
what? On slash? And
well,
slash
on on what? On the boundary that we're not supposed to cross on the air.
Yeah, what can we?
He also just has a great radio voice. Why don't we
start reading?
Start reading, and you'll interrupt me if this gets too bad.
Uh oh, he's going over to monitor and protect.
Okay, this is from a longer work of mine called De Re Vulcania. He remembered the day he had heard of the Orion plans. It had been nearly 5 years ago, and Samuel had been off planet with his grandparents, visiting Terra, Earth, he corrected himself. When did I start thinking of Earth as Terra? When did my world become alien to me? He shook himself. Spock had decided to make the day interesting. Jim had come home from a morning walk and was taking a shower when Spock slipped in with him. The Vulcan's soapy hands had roamed over Kirk's body, tweaking his nipples, caressing his balls. All right, I suppose I can't say that.
Testicles, yeah.
That's his testicles. Spock had knelt and taken Jim's penis in his mouth, letting the alien heat light a fire in the human's belly, and then pulled back. He had risen, pressed Jim back against the wall, and lifted him by the thighs so that his knees were drawn up to the level of the Vulcan's waist. It was one of the few times that Spock had used his strength in such a way. My turn, Spock had whispered, and entered him.
Wow. Now, that was both, you know, educational, artistically relevant, and powerfully arousing. Wouldn't you agree, Paolo?
Yes.
Wow, that was fabulous. And so that you've got a whole little novella there or something, which goes into this in more detail.
Yes, actually I'm working on chapters 9 through 16 right now.
So what I found arousing about that, and there was plenty, believe me, had nothing to do with the characters, had nothing to do with Spock or whoever was there.
Kirk.
Of Kirk, thank you. See, I don't even know them that well, but I could be aroused anyway. So I wonder how important it is that it's about Star Trek.
Well, I think there's one thing. If you're going to go into the... I mean, some people draw a distinction between erotica and pornography, as in pornography is what's sometimes called a plot.
Right.
It just goes on, and there's no character development at all. And obviously something like Star Trek is good for that, because you have this automatic characterization for these people. And the challenge when trying to make it erotica is drawing out elements of those characters that you don't normally see. So.
Right.
So is most slash erotica or pornography then?
I think most of it's erotica.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it's erotica.
So there's not much just straight pornography that happens to have these characters in it?
There's some. Most of the little vignettes that people write are of that type.
Just a
random excuse for people to act like crazed rabbits.
So the idea that occurs to me, and we don't have much time left, is do people ever write about situations that defy normal biology? For example, you can imagine, you know, I'd like to be put in the transporter and given five penises, or become both male and female, or, you know, there's all kinds of variations you can expect when you transcend the normal constraints on.
All those handy aliens out there.
Exactly. Is there a lot of that? Like the Horta.
Shape changers, even.
Dr. Crusher, give me another penis, please. Yes.
Exactly. Well, they often get prosthetics for espionage reasons. Why not for other reasons?
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of that, although it's an interesting idea. I may have to develop that.
I certainly know it, that works into my sexual fantasies a lot.
Uh-oh.
Well, we are just about out of time. I want to thank our fabulous guests for being here. And do you have any sort of parting comments for the Trekkies, or should I say Trekkers out there?
Well, and actually, URL, by the way, to your website.
Yeah, people wanted to get this stuff.
Oh, a URL to my website?
Yeah, if you're comfortable giving that.
Sure. www.andrew.samu.edu/ the little twiddle thing, JACQUEZ. It's not easy to spell.
Sense for Jacque.
Well, it's pronounced Jacque. There's also, if you want more information on slash fiction, if you go to www.yahoo.com and do a search on slash fiction, you get a whole bunch of stuff comes up. So.
Fabulous. Well, thanks very much for joining us. It's WRCT 88.3 FM. It's midnight. Thanks
WRCT
for listening.
WRCT Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Excuse me.
Pittsburgh.